helping the church to grow by being a leader, by stepping forward to taking care of your obligations, but more than that, to set goals for what is ahead and to meet those goals and to do things that a lot of people will shake their head and say, we just can't do it. Well, you can't. Because how many things can you do through Christ that gives you strength?
All things.
Not some things?
No.
Not half the things? Not three quarters of things? But all things through Him that gives us strength. Luke chapter 14, verses 26 through 35, is a very difficult passage of Scripture for people to understand. And I pray that as we study this, it will touch your life and propel you, because the title of this lesson is A Leader to Arise. Our first lesson was on a plan to build. Our next lesson was on a charge to keep. Sunday night, I forgot what it was on. But what tonight is A Leader to Arise. I'll think of it in a minute. But the idea is this is to help us grow and go beyond where we are and do what we can do, not what we think we can do, but beyond what we can do. In verse 26, the Bible says this: if anyone comes to me and does not hate his father, and can everybody hear me okay? And does not hate his father and mother and children and brothers and sisters, yea, and his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. And whoever does not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. For which of you, intending to build a tower, does not sit down first and count the cost, whether he has enough to finish it? Lest after he has laid the foundation and is not able to finish, all who see it begin to mock him, saying, this man began to build and was not able to finish. But what king, going to make war against another king, does not sit down first and consider whether he is able with 10,000 to meet him that comes against him with 20,000? Or else, while the other is still a great way off, he sends a delegation and asks conditions of peace. So likewise, whoever of you who does not forsake all that he has cannot be my disciple. Salt is good, but if the salt has lost its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? It is neither fit for the land nor for the dunghill, but men throw it out. He who has ears to hear, let him hear. Now this is all one context. So it all fits together like a piece of a puzzle. And one of the things he talks about here is being a leader. Now the very first one is what people have the most trouble with, the very first verse. If anyone comes to me and does not hate his father, his mother, what in the world does that mean? Any of y'all here hate your father and mother? I get some funny looks from somebody. Hating your father and mother in the way that it may come across in English is not exactly what he's talking about. But it's a very powerful word. And what it means, hate involves a disconnect. That's what he's using. It's a strong word involving a disconnect. And what do I mean? Well, leaders, to begin with, leaders, if a leader is to arise, leaders must rise above their circumstances. They must be able to do what they're not expected to do by mother, father, sister, brother, and so on. There was a duck one time that walked into a convenience store, and he asked the man behind the counter, he said, do you have any grapes? And the man said, well, we used to carry grapes, but we no them so we don't carry grapes anymore. So the duck thanked him and walked out the door. The duck comes in the next day and said, do you have any grapes? And the man behind the counter said, duck, I told you yesterday we don't carry grapes. So he thanked him and walked out the door. Next day, the duck comes back. He said, what do you want, duck? He said, do you have any grapes? He says, duck, I have told you 3 times now that we don't have any grapes. If you come in here asking again if we have grapes, I'm going to nail your feet to the floor. The very next day, the duck walks in and said, he said, all right, duck, what do you want now? He said, do you have any nails? And the man said, no. He said, all right, do you have any grapes? You see, you have to be consistent and persistent and do what people don't think you can do. For one problem with that story is that ducks usually don't eat grapes, and most of the time they don't talk. So, and they seldom go into convenience stores, although dogs do sometimes. But the leaders rise above their circumstances. When you have mom and dad and brother and sister, a lot of times they hold you down without wanting to, without meaning to. My dad had epilepsy. He didn't have the grand mal seizures, but he had the petit mal, and he wanted to be a missionary in India. And he was going out raising money, and he announced to his home congregation what he was going to do. My grandmother, who baited him all his life, went through the seat. And she was going around talking to the elders, don't let him go, he can't go, he'll have a seizure over there and die. You know, and so on. And my mother had some problems, said, and you don't want to take her along, you know, she has problems too and everything. I mean, she just went on and on and on about it. But my dad was determined to go to India. If he had listened, now, my dad wasn't able to go to India because Indira Gandhi was mad at him. United States at the time and canceled his visa 3 times. So we weren't able to go. We ended up in a little town just down the road from our sponsoring congregation in Porter, Texas, which is part of it is now underwater in the Houston area. Anyway, and I'm glad we went to Porter, Texas and not India, but my dad loved the Lord and he loved to work for the Lord, and he wasn't able to go to India. But if he had listened to family and friends, he would have never even tried. Because his mother didn't want him to go. His brother told him, says, you don't need to go over there. Sister told him, you don't need to go over there. A lot of his friends told him, you don't need to go over there. But you know something? Sometimes you have to break ranks with the people that love you the most and are the closest to you, in order to really do great things. Look at Jesus. Jesus, when he went back home to preach, how well was he received by the people there? Not at all. I mean, he grew up in this synagogue. His brothers didn't believe in him. I don't know about his sisters. They even convinced his mother to go pick him up because they thought he was crazy at one time. And after he got up there and read a passage from Scripture, and he said, this day this prophecy has been spoken to your ears. It has come true. It's about me. Well, they took him to the edge of the cliff, and they're going to throw him over. He just walked right through them. And he couldn't do hardly anything because there wasn't any faith there. He healed a few people, but No one believed he was the Christ. And it wasn't until after his resurrection from the dead, as far as we know, that his brothers did. And two of his brothers became church leaders, James and Jude. By the way, the book of James, just to let you know, James is not James. James, the Hebrew, it's the anglicized name, and that's a stretch for Jacob. If you read from the Greek text, it's Jacob. It was James because King James, see, was funding the translation of the Bible, and they had to appease King James, so they made all the New Testament Jacobs Jameses. It's an anglicized version of Jacob. Don't let it worry you. It hasn't changed anything in the Bible. And the Bible's still the same. And just in case you ever wonder, you can say, well, his name was Jacob, you know, originally. But that's okay. But leaders have to rise above their circumstances. What if David had listened to his two older brothers? What are you doing up here? You ought to be back with those few sheep down the field. You don't need to be up here. We're trying to, here's this guy Goliath, and he is just really bearing down on us, and nobody can go and deal with him. And he says, who is he to defy the armies of the living God? And you just see his brothers rolling their eyes. So he goes to Saul, and Saul, I'll go against him. Well, he's a young man, but Saul didn't have a choice. Nobody else would go against Goliath. The guy's nearly 10 foot tall. And so Saul gives him his armor, and Saul is a head taller than everybody else. So his armor could not fit David. And David didn't need all that armor anyway. He says, I've got this worked out. So we all know the song. Little boy David, 500 stones he took. You know, one went in the sling and up, and I can't remember how it goes. Anyway. If David hadn't done what he did, through the faith of God, and by the way, the stone, we're not sure that it really killed him at first, but at least it knocked him out. It sunk deep in his forehead, and he came with his Goliath sword and cut his head off. And the Philistines didn't keep their promise because they were supposed to be the servants of Israel if an Israelite won. Well, they didn't keep their promise. But anyway, they would be eventually. Whom David took power. But if David had listened to his brothers, there would still have been a Goliath. I don't think that Saul would have ever gone up against Goliath. If he did, he'd have been a dead man. You have to ask yourself, what is my Goliath? What are the things that are holding me back from being a godly person, from being happy in life, from having security in life, having a God watching over me to protect me from life's difficulties? What's keeping me back from growing more as a Christian? What is your Goliath? It may be Bible study. It may be somebody that has hurt your feelings. It may be somebody that you think should have done something when they didn't, when they just stood by and let it happen to you. Everyone has Goliaths in their lives. And it is those people who hate, in a way of disconnect, of listening to family and friends and going forward of what they think of them and rising to the top and being a leader in God's army. Everyone can rise to be a leader in God's army. You may not be an elder someday, or a deacon, or a preacher. You may not get the opportunity. Some of you can, some of you can't. But there are ways to lead in the Lord's church that people have to rise up. And I've seen little widow ladies that in one congregation we worked with, there are two widows and the wife of a husband who's on the road all the time, that right now are having to make the day-to-day decisions because they were down the line people. And they don't want to make those decisions. And they finally got a preacher. And those people of 12, now about 20, they're supporting their preacher to the tune of $40,000 a year. And I remember getting an email from an elder that was going to another church in the town next to them. And he says, why are you stirring up those old ladies? Nobody's going to want to go there and be a preacher. Well, Well, if I listened to that man, then I would have just given up. But I wasn't listening to him. I was listening to God. And God tells me that all things are possible for Jesus Christ. And they not only had one preacher try out, they had four. And one of them, the one that God had wanted it so bad, he'd call me every week and hound me, did you hear anything? I want to go there so bad. I love those people. Isn't that something, how God works? But sometimes you have to rise above what people think you're able or not able to do. And that's why he talked about, he used the word hate. It means a disconnect. That doesn't mean that you leave your family, you don't have anything to do with them, you don't work with your family. That means that when it comes to spiritual matters, you're going to have to rise above what your family thinks of you. And you're going to have to let them see the growth of what God's Word can do in you and in your life. Secondly, leaders rise above their doubts and fears. In verse 21, he says, verse 27, and whoever does not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. What does a cross mean to you? Some jewelry you hang around your neck?
Difficulties.
What's that?
Difficulties.
Difficulties? Do you know what it meant to those people there? It meant being nailed on two pieces of wood outside the city and leaving you there to rot until you died, and sometimes they let your body rot on the cross. So when you walked into a town, what you would see is crosses with rotting bodies on either side as you walked in there. And what it meant was, you better not start any trouble or you're going to be on one of these. Now that's what it meant to them. And it means the same thing to us if we'll read it right. What does it mean to take up a cross? Some people say, well, it means just to take your problems up, throw them over your shoulders and go on. I've seen people, you might have too, in towns from time to time, that will take a cross, a whole cross, and bear it, wear it, they'll go down the streets with it. The only problem is that Jesus went with a 50-pound cross beam. It wasn't even together yet. And the cross looked more like a T than a cross. And when they were nailed to the cross, they weren't nailed here in their hands. They were nailed here. And Jesus, you couldn't even identify as a human being by the time he got on the cross. Isaiah 52 says that his countenance was disfigured. His face was disfigured more than any other man. By the time they beat him, and it wasn't just 39 lashes like the Jews, they beat him until he got tired. With a cat of nine tails. With the ends of it, glass and bone, fish hooks. And then beat him with a cane pole on his head. He had two crown thorns, by the way. One from the Jews and one from the Romans. Happy birthday. And did you know that there are some people that are of the Church of Christ that have been around for nearly 2,000 years. Actually, they've been around for several thousand years. It's the Medes you read about in the Bible, and they are in Azerbaijan. At one time, 1965, there were 750,000 members of the Church of Christ who for nearly 2,000 years worshiped the same way we do. It was an amazing thing. But they're having to be in hiding continually because they have the Russian Orthodox Church on one side putting them in jail and harassing them. And then they have the Catholics don't kill them anymore as they used to. And then now the Muslims want to get their hands on them and do away with them. And they're ridiculed and they're called all kinds of names. One of their elders was put in prison for 15 years. And they claimed his crime was that he claimed to be Jesus Christ. But finally they figured out, someone that was sympathetic to him came and talked with him, and he says, this man didn't claim to be Jesus Christ. He was trying to restore New Testament Christianity Heard that before? He was trying to restore New Testament Christianity. He was a leader. His life didn't mean anything. All that meant anything to him was going out and trying to bring people to Christ. That is what was important to him. The cross is a death instrument. And when he says, take up the cross, the word take is in the continual sense. You continually take up the cross. It doesn't mean going around with a padded cross with wheels around the neighborhood and letting people laugh at you. That's not what it means. It means putting self to death. Romans chapter 12, 1 and 2. Brethren, I beseech you by the mercies of the living God that you offer yourself as a living sacrifice to God, holy and acceptable unto the Lord, which is your reasonable service. The word reasonable means was used for temple service. We are saints and priests in the kingdom of God. And taking up a cross means to put self to death. Leaders rise above doubts and fears because they have put their conscience and their fears and their doubts to death. It's no longer important to them. Making money is not the most important thing in their life. Breathing is no longer the most important thing in their life. Everything else comes second because they're putting themselves to death. And you know something? When a horse is dead, you can kick that horse all you want and you're not going to hurt him at all. And when as I die inside, as I get persecuted, as I get people that say things about me, and believe me, there are people that think I am totally insane, and that's okay as long as I'm insane for Christ. But it doesn't matter anymore because I don't care about what people say. What's important to me is what God says about me. When he says, look down at John Orr. You know, I've been working with him for a long time. Is he going to do what we've been talking about him doing? Is he going to finish the job once he started it? Is he going to make good on his promises? Or is he just going to give up? I have to die every day, like Paul said, and put to death my fears, my anxieties, and my worries. And believe me, starting this thing about 2 years ago, we had a lot of doubts and worries. But God has come through every time. When we don't think that we're going to make it, or when we have to add somebody or something new to what we're doing, something always comes about. God always rescues us. When you learn to lean on God, then you have grown to the point of where self is no longer important. If I go broke doing what we're doing, if I lose my health doing what we're doing, if we go out and get killed in a car accident doing what we're doing, then I have the greatest thing in the world looking ahead for me. I have heaven, something so unbelievable that Jesus couldn't even describe when he was on earth, because we wouldn't understand. When he talked about the streets of gold in Revelation, he was not talking about heaven, he was talking about the church. That's how treasured that we are as a church to God. We can't even imagine what heaven is because heaven is a place without space and time. Once we go to Disney World and see it and experience it once and go about four other times, it's old hat. In heaven without space and time, you'll experience the same thing anew, again, again, and again for an eternity. That's what it means to be living without space and time. Leaders rise above their doubts and fears because they are not a victim anymore. They don't have to feel sorry for themselves anymore. There's nothing to feel sorry for because they've already put that to death. And it takes a long time. pursuit to crucify self. You know, sometimes, but we're just captive of our fears and our doubts and our worries. How can this congregation get to the point where we can support a full-time preacher? How can this congregation grow, double, triple in size? How can this congregation make a difference in this town? What can we do? We got to have somebody that can turn it around. No, what you need is everybody carrying their cross and being a disciple of Jesus Christ and not worrying about how much they have and not worrying about what they don't have and rise above those things and do what needs to be done. There was a man that was married to a woman for 35 years. And about every other night, she would hear a sound downstairs. She'd wake him up and say, Harvey, go downstairs. So there's a burglar in the house. No, there's nobody downstairs. Harvey, go downstairs. So he'd go look in the back, look at the door, the front door, make sure they didn't lock. Come back up, there's nobody down there. Well, I know I heard something. It's probably just the cat. Probably a creaking in the board or something. 35 years, every other night, she'd wake him up. Finally, one night, she heard a plump. Harvey, there's a burglar downstairs. Esther, we've been through this now all these years. There's not a burglar downstairs. Harvey, I know there's a burglar this time. I just know he is. There's one down there. He gets up with a flashlight, walks down there, and sure enough, there was a burglar down there, and the burglar was surprised. And so is the man, and the burglar starts to run off. And he said, no, wait, come back. My wife's been waiting for 35 years to meet you. You know, we can worry about things so much to the point where we lose our own identity. And we become followers of the crowd and not leaders with the cross. And finally, leaders rise above their limitations. He goes on to say, for which of you intending to build a tower does not sit down first and count the cost, whether he has enough to finish? Lest after he has laid the foundation and is not able to finish, all who see it began to mock him, saying, this man began to build and was not able to finish. But what king going to make war against another king does not sit down first and consider whether he is able with 10,000 to meet him who comes against him with 20,000? Or else, while the other is still a great way off, he sends a delegation and asks conditions of peace. So, likewise, whoever of you who does not forsake all that he has cannot, and I stress the word cannot, it's a double negative in the Greek, be my disciple. Counting the cost is something we do every day. If you want to buy a new TV, if you want to buy new clothes, if you want to put gas in your car, you have to count the cost. You try to go to the cheapest place you can go. Instead of buying clothes at Walmart, you go to garage sales or whatever. You do the best that you can to make it on what you have. You have to count the cost in order to be a good financial person, in order to be a responsible person. But true leaders learn the freedom of forsaking all. Do you know who the most generous people are as a whole? The people who have nothing. You know who the least generous people are? People that have everything. They're the least generous. You know, you can go into a bar, and I don't recommend going into a bar, but you go into a bar and something will happen and your car won't start or you don't have any money or whatever. Those people will pull their shirts off and give it to you. Oh, they don't have money. they don't have a home anymore, they lost it. But you don't have to go to a bar to understand the importance of rising above your limitations. What are you really limited by? What is this church limited by? The money? Are you kidding me? You're not limited by that. Are you limited by manpower in here? No. I've seen people with less do a lot. Are you limited by age? Are you limited by cars that are irritating when they go off?
You might want to check.
It was me. Hello. Okay. What are you limited by? When you forsake all, what does it mean to forsake all? Go out and sell everything that you have and just bum off everybody? No. It means that you've turned over ownership of everything that you have in Jesus Christ. It means that it belongs to Him. And you are the steward to make the decision that God gave you with what you have and what you're going to do with it. That's what it means to forsake all. It's a good feeling when you give a lot of things away to people and you don't get anything back. It's a good feeling. Sometimes we take and take and take and take and take and we feel terrible about ourselves. But when you have nothing and you can give, still give things away, it means all the world to you. And if you look at it from the standpoint that you don't own anything, that it all belongs to God, your bed belongs to God, your car belongs to God, your land belongs to God, your glasses belong to God, and I've paid a lot of money for these glasses. I bought 10 of them at Dollar Tree, and I've got them all placed around, so if I lose them, I'll find them. But when you say that everything belongs to God, it's a great freedom because you're not limited anymore. And God will provide. As he talks about in Corinthians chapter 9, God will provide bread for the sower. Because what you sow is what you will reap. And if you sow sparingly, you will reap sparingly. And if you sow grudgingly, you will reap grudgingly. And if you sow bountifully, you will reap bountifully, because you cannot outgive God. You cannot outwork God. God is working on people that you know, family members, other people. He's working on them 24/7. He's not going to give up till their dying breath. And neither should you. And your love should extend to them in ways in which you just think you can't do anymore. Just remind them that I will exceed my limitations if you will. If I can see you giving more time, giving more of yourself to other people, you say, I don't have anything. Everybody has something. Everybody can be generous. Everybody can be merciful. Everybody can be kind. Everybody can be polite. Everybody can be thankful. Everybody can encourage other people. There are things that money cannot buy that you can do if you rise above your limitations. You say, well, I'm shy. Well, you know, I don't like going in a big crowd of people I don't know. Never have. And sometimes I have to force myself to do it. It's like the fellow that didn't want to go to church. And his wife said, but you have to go. No, I'm not going. I'm not going to face those people anymore. They give me a hard time every Sunday. Says every time I go there, I get somebody mistreating me. She said, you have to go. You're the preacher. Sometimes we just have to bite the bullet. But if we don't have anything to lose, it makes it easier to believe, doesn't it? Now I'm going to close with what he says here about salt is good, but if salt has lost its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? Can I tell something on you, Bob, you told me tonight? He ate at a restaurant, and it was terrible. And the manager asked him, how did it taste? He said, the salt and pepper were great. If salt loses its savor, it's not good for anything. You know, when I was growing up at school, they had crackers in the salt. They had a big salt bill in the little thing, and they had crackers in it. Because if moisture gets in there, salt will bunch up and lose the savor. And if moisture gets in, it kills the taste and becomes worthless. And they used to put salt on the roads there. But salt was a valuable commodity. In fact, the Romans often paid their soldiers with salt because salt wasn't an easy spice to find. That's where the phrase, being worth your salt, came from, was all the way back to the Roman Empire, for a man being worth his salt. And so, salt was a valuable commodity, and even though it's cheap today, I really don't want to eat corn on the cob without salt until the doctor says no. And then I'm going to cheat a little bit. When we let sin, doubt, fear, circumstances, family, limitations enter into our lives like moisture in the salt, then we will become worthless to Jesus and the community. But you know, even worthless salt can be restored by replacing a container with new salt, with fresh salt. In a life that's broken down by sin, broken down by limitations, doubts, fears, hurt, and clings to those hurts and complaints and thinks that they'll never be better than those things. Those people like that, maybe some of you are like that, I don't know. I got tired of living that way. And I figured that if I didn't have anything to lose, then I could rise above my limitations and I could be worth something to God. There's an old poem that I'll bet all of you have heard, but I love it. So with your permission, I want to read it to you anyway, because it really describes what we've been talking about tonight. A leader must arise. 'Twas battered and scarred, and the old auctioneer thought it scarcely worth his while to spend much time on the old violin, so he held it up with a smile. What am I bidding, good folks, he cried, and who'll stop the bidding for me? A dollar? Only two. $2, who'll make it three? $3 once, $3 twice, but no. Far from the back room came a gray-haired man and picked up the bow. And dusting off the violin and tightening the loose strings, he played a melody pure and sweet as a caroling angel sings. The music ceased, and the auctioneer, with a voice that was quiet and low, said, what am I bid for the old violin? And he held it up with a bow. $1,000. And who will make it two? $2,000. And who will make it three? $3,000 once, $3,000 twice, going and gone, said he. The people cheered, but some of them cried, we don't quite understand. What changed its worth? Swiftly came the reply, the touch of the master's hand. And many a soul with a life out of tune and battered and scarred with sin is auctioned cheap to the thoughtless crowd, much like the old violin. A mess of pottage, a glass of wine, a game, and they travel on. He's going once, he's going twice, he's going and almost gone, but the master steps in and
and the foolish crowd can never understand the worth of a soul and the change that's wrought by the touch of the Master's hand. If you're here tonight and you need prayers of the church, or there's anything that you would like to do, or just consider carefully the song that we sing. We're going to sing a song that our little children sing. And if you would stand